This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You, featuring Libertarian candidates running for office this year who are working to make your life better and to keep America prosperous, safe, and free. For the second half of our show, we'll bring on Bill Redpath, a Libertarian running for U.S. Representative of Virginia's 10th Congressional District. He was a Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senator in 2008, and he has run for Virginia House of Delegates, the Virginia Senate, and for Governor of Virginia. He has served two terms as the national chair for the Libertarian Party, and he is a key contributor to the party's ballot access in states across the country. He is a certified public accountant and vice president of a financial consulting firm in media and telecommunications. He graduated from the Indiana University and has an MBA from the University of Chicago. His website, redpath2014.com, will be launched this month. Bill Redpath, welcome to the show.
Carla, thanks for having me.
Wonderful to have you on. So please give us an idea, as you embark on this congressional campaign, what we should look forward to and what will be the focus of your campaign?
I think the focus of the campaign is going to be the issue of economic freedom in the United States, because that's going to be, although won't be stated quite as bluntly by particularly Democratic politicians, they are going to, I think, be running on the issue of income inequality. I know that's coming down the pike. The minimum wage, wanting to increase that. Basically, they won't say that they want to undertake new policies that are going to further restrict the economic freedom of Americans, but that is in fact what they want to do. And what I want to point out is that the United States, in two well-known surveys, used to rank second in the world as late as 2000, just behind Hong Kong in terms of economic freedom. We are falling. We are now down, I believe we're number 12 in one and number 19 in another, but regardless, we've fallen below number 10. This has happened since the year 2000, and less economic freedom means less prosperity in the long run. If you break the nations of the world into quartiles, those that are most economically free have the highest per capita income, and then it's down, down, down. And the United States, ostensibly the land of the free, is slowly but surely having its economic freedom eroded. And it's going to be about adopting the federal government, adopting more free market economic policies for the long-run prosperity of the people of the United States.
So if you're a person who cares about the poor, then economic freedom should be very high on your list of priorities.
Absolutely. This is one of the reasons I'm opposed to the minimum wage or any minimum wage above zero, because, and not that I don't want people to live good, prosperous lives. I do. But the minimum wage is simply a bad idea that eliminates, and some people, some supporters of the minimum wage over the years, by the way, know exactly the economic effect and have wanted to restrict competition in labor markets. And the problem is that by setting the minimum wage too high, they are harming the people they are intending to hurt by overpricing labor in the labor market. And people can't get their first jobs, can't begin to work up the economic ladder if they're priced out of their beginning job. That's what the minimum wage does for a lot of people.
So if you're somebody who graduated or maybe didn't graduate from high school, or maybe a mom returning to the workforce who never had a high-paying job, these are some of the people who are hurt by a minimum wage law?
Well, exactly, but not just that. Most of the minimum wage, there are very few heads of households who actually earn the minimum wage. They tend to be younger people. Some are from very affluent households. And I remember my first job, I was paid the minimum wage. Back in 1974, I was paid $2 an hour. But that first job, which was working at a commercial radio station in my hometown of Findlay, Ohio, frankly, I would have done it for 10 cents an hour. I mean, it allowed me to develop some skills that have served me well in many ways through the rest of my life. And if that minimum wage had been $8 an hour or $10 an hour at the time, or even $5 an hour, you know, maybe they would have said, yeah, maybe it would be better if this radio station were automated as opposed to having, you know, somebody live on the air. So you begin displacing people, and for businesses to look for ways to try to cut costs when you set the minimum wage too high.
So what, obviously you are going to vote against any minimum wage law if you are elected to Congress. Do you have any other plans with respect to actions you would take regarding the minimum wage?
Well, I would try to repeal the federal minimum wage. I mean, it's up to the states. If they want to take action in that, that is within their rights within the U.S. Constitution. I would strongly advise them against doing so. And if I were running for the Virginia legislature or a member of the Virginia legislature, I would vote against such legislation. But I do think the federal minimum wage ought to be repealed.
Oh, that sounds very good. So you would be willing to sponsor a bill to repeal the minimum wage or vote? That's awesome. You know, there is, as you say, this is going to be a big issue this year. You can tell the Democratic Party is really working to make it their main talking point for the year. And it's, unfortunately, they're succeeding so far with public opinion, approval ratings still pretty high. They also won several ballot initiatives on this last year, although at least one lost that I know of. But we need to counter that. We need to show people that this really is not what it appears to be. It's something that hurts the poor.
Right. Well, I remember an interview that was done with Ed Crane in Liberty Magazine years ago, and he said, quote, "We vote on too much," unquote. Now, we're going to have a democracy, but that is a very trenchant statement, in my opinion, that we vote on too much. Really, what gives everybody the right to decide what an agreement is going to be between a business and an individual being employed by that business? I mean, that in and of itself, that concept begins to restrict liberty right there. But then when you actually implement policies that harm the poor, that will price them out of the labor market, many of these people, again, I want people to be employed and to earn a good wage, but at the end of the day, it depends on the worker's productivity and the skills they bring to their job, and by forcing a certain minimum wage, again, it's going to have a negative impact on the people with lowest skills in the workforce.
You know, I think that's very well said, and what you said earlier as well. I think you were referring to what we used to, the word apprenticeship, you don't hear spoken very much anymore, but I think that's what you were describing with your college experience, that apprenticeship is extremely valuable to the worker. And, you know, we all need to learn skills when we first come out of school or enter the job force. And so this is a way to do it. A lot of people are willing to do it for free. They're willing to do it for half the minimum wage because they get benefit from it. They get a training. I mean, it's, you know, people are willing to go to school and pay thousands and thousands of dollars and incur huge amounts of debt. Why wouldn't they want to avoid that, get a little bit of money, even if below the minimum wage, and get an education from it?
Right. I understand the thinking, I think I do anyway, among people who want a higher minimum wage. Well, that person deserves such and such. But really, it's not their call. It's not their place to decide who deserves what when they're not involved in the transaction, when it's not their money involved in the transaction. If they want to go to a store that is going to charge them higher prices because they are paying higher wages to their workers and they do so voluntarily, fine. That certainly is libertarian. But again, I just think that there's some free lunch mentality, I think, involved in people who think the minimum wage should be higher when they don't think through all the ramifications as to higher prices and even higher prices being paid by the poor for products and services, the people they want to help.
That's a good point. In fact, I heard that the people who patronize Walmart are about at the same income level as the people who work at Walmart. So if you force Walmart to raise its wages, you're going to force all the people who buy at Walmart to pay more.
Exactly. Exactly. That is, and it's inevitably going to happen. You cannot repeal the laws of economics. I understand the good wishes that people intend through minimum wage legislation for those who are less fortunate in our society. But again, you've got to think through all the ramifications.
Would you agree it's also not fair to the small business person? I mean, a lot of these people are making less than minimum wage, and they also had to mortgage their house or whatever they had to start a business and put themselves at great financial risk. They're a first-year startup. They're working 60, 80, 100 hours a week. They're dog-tired, and then the government tells them they can't hire someone for below a so-called minimum wage, and now they're stuck having to work even more hours for lower pay.
Yeah, I have not been an entrepreneur in my life. I salute those people. I remember a conversation I had once with my late uncle, who was an architect in Colorado Springs, and he said to me one time on the phone, just a very short sentence that cut right to the heart of the matter, he said, "Bill, you never had to meet a payroll." And it just, that stopped me right there, and I already had free market leanings, but there is a tremendous responsibility undertaken by people employing others who are starting new businesses, who are taking huge risks, changing their lives, maybe quitting their job, to take a real risk. And I think that entrepreneurship is something that is underappreciated in our society.
I think that's a great point. Thank you so much. We're talking with Bill Redpath, the Libertarian, running for Congress in Virginia's 10th District. His website, launching later this month, is redpath2014.com. Please be sure to visit lp.org, the Libertarian Party website, and consider joining the party. Help us work for you. Help candidates like Bill Redpath help you and your family and your community. And get involved. You can meet all kinds of great libertarians in your area and learn ways that you can help. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Carla Howell. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
It's time to take a new look at some of life's changing moments. It's time to listen to an expert who has been there and can provide insight through experience, studies, and enlightening guests. Tune in to Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets. Host Lindsay Levinson takes a look at relationships, parenting, health and wellness, divorce, depression, sexuality, philanthropy, and mental health. You'll look at everything you know in a different way. Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets, airs Wednesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Living your best life isn't just about fitness and health. It's also about living a better life emotionally and creating balance. You know where you want to be, but what steps do you take to get there? Listen to Good Health for a Great Life with host Rick Barnabo. We'll bring you guest experts and tools to help you connect the dots from who and where you are to who and where you want to be. It's time to take responsibility for your life. Listen every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. We're talking to Bill Redpath, the Libertarian running for Congress in Virginia's 10th District. Bill, can you tell us your take on taxes. What will you do if you're elected to the U.S. Congress?
Well, I first of all want lower government spending. That's the real cost of government to a society is government spending. And so we'll get to that if we have time, because I certainly want to undertake great reductions in federal spending, not just the mild increases that the Republicans want. But in any event, but as far as changing our tax system, we've got to greatly simplify our tax system. I mean, I'm a certified public accountant in Virginia, although I actually don't work as an accountant in my job. I use skills that I learned as an accountant. But believe me, I deal with taxes. I do my own taxes, and it's a total headache. Our tax system is inefficient. It is too complicated. We have double taxation of corporate dividends. We have gift and estate taxes that are very complicated to administer and have a deleterious effect on people's ability to accumulate wealth for themselves and their descendants. We need, in my opinion, we need a greatly simplified tax system. The one I prefer and think is the most workable is a flat tax, which would have basically after a generous exemption to make sure that the poor are not on tax rolls, to make sure the family can make ends meet before they begin paying taxes, to have one flat rate, do away with deductions and various tax credits, and also do away with the double taxation of dividends and capital gains. That's the best thing we can do right now to get this economy moving again.
Okay, so let's talk more about this. And this includes, or is this a separate from your proposal to actually eliminate the corporate income tax?
Well, with the flat tax, actually, there would be an individual tax and there would be a business tax. But because business profits would be, and they would be taxed at the same rate, by the way, and I like the Hall-Rabushka flat tax, and that's what is called for in their flat tax. But then the profits, after they've been taxed at the business level, then they flow to the owners tax-free. So people would no longer be double taxed on capital gains. I mean, as Steve Forbes once put it, once through the system and it's yours. And I think that is a goal of any tax system, would be to stop the third time tax through gift and estate taxes. We need to stop this tax it and then tax it again and then tax it again mentality that we have in our current tax code.
And this, no doubt, creates perverse incentives, not to mention a tremendous amount of bookkeeping imposed on the people who have to pay these taxes.
Absolutely. When you have an IRS commissioner state that he does not do his own taxes because the system is too complicated, I think that says it all. It says the system is broken, and it needs to be greatly simplified, but it needs to be simplified in a way that it encourages savings and investment and entrepreneurship, which all of that is key to a prosperous society.
Okay, so this will encourage savings, investment, and entrepreneurship. Tell us more about why that would be true under your plan.
Because of low tax rates. That's, and also because individuals would not be taxed on dividends, would not be taxed on capital gains. And also one key provision of the Hall-Rabushka flat tax is that capital expenditures are expensed in the year they are made, not depreciated over a complicated tax schedule over many years, 5, 7, 10 buildings, 31 and a half years, that's in the Internal Revenue Code. So you would help spur investment, which helps spur productivity by businesses and their workers by allowing businesses to expense capital expenditures on their tax form in the year that the expenditure is made and not depreciated over many years.
So under your proposal, would you expect a lot fewer people would be dependent on accountants or software or some other tool to get their taxes filed?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the, I know there are a lot of computer people in the Libertarian Party and or libertarians generally, but unfortunately one of the downsides of this of tax software is that they've made doing taxes easier, but that doesn't take away the economic disincentives from the high marginal tax rates and also the various deductions. I mean, the various deductions and credits that special interests have gotten from the tax code are very inefficient for the economy, and where special interests come in and have manipulated the tax code through acts of Congress to benefit themselves. But I say get rid of all that, lower tax rates, make things better for everyone.
So I assume your goal here, or tell me if I'm wrong, your goal is to reduce the total amount of revenue being collected? Are you trying to drive down taxes?
Or? I think we should balance the budget, but the way you're going to balance the budget is by cutting expenditures. That's the way we've got to go. So what I would say is that if you cut expenditures enough, then you can reduce taxes, and I would certainly want to reduce the tax rate with the flat tax to something as low as possible. Now, I think Hall Rabushka last proposed a tax rate of 19%. It's whatever whatever will balance the budget, but the way you would achieve that would be through spending reductions.
Okay, so today to balance the budget, we're talking about nearly $1 trillion in annual spending. Can you tell us how we would do this? Where would we cut spending? How can we do it?
Well, I would just say this, rather than rattle on about it, I think politicians don't have to have a single original idea. They just have to choose wisely among the ideas that are floating around out there. And I like the specific cuts on downsizinggovernment.org, which is from the Cato Institute. It's online, and they go department by department and add up hundreds of billions of dollars per year. Might be over $1 trillion. I need to add it up again myself, but it would be hundreds of billions of dollars per year from federal government agencies that are doing things they just shouldn't be doing. But particularly the Department of Education should be eliminated. It's not in the Constitution. It hasn't added anything to American education over its existence going back to the 1970s. The Department of Housing and Urban Development has been a hotbed of corruption, frankly, over the years. And I think elimination of that alone would be someplace in the ballpark of, I believe, $80 billion a year savings. I think you've got to end corporate welfare. You've got to end farm subsidies, and I mean immediately. Corporate welfare is over $100 billion a year from the federal government going to subsidize corporations. The Farm Bill recently was panned by the Wall Street Journal and all sorts of publications and individuals. So there's a lot there. But the main thing is entitlements. Now we're up to the point where 51% of the expenditures of the federal government last year were transfer payments. Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid. We have to do something about the entitlements with Social Security. I think that we should adopt the Cato Institute 6.2% plan for Social Security to allow younger people to opt out of Social Security, waive their future benefits, but be able to save on their own. People in Chile can do it. People in Chile love it, and you've got many ordinary people retiring as millionaires under the system in Chile. Why can't we have that in the land of the free? Medicaid needs to be turned into a block grant and phased out over 10 years. It should be the responsibility of the states, and that's how it should be treated. Get the federal government out over a 10-year period, and with Medicare for people who are in need of help during their older years for medicine and medical care, should have some sort of voucher program, and that is the way to go to rein in the expenditures that are, if not curbed soon, are going to lead to some sort of economic catastrophe for this nation over the next 10 to 20 years.
Well, you know, these proposals are tremendously refreshing. We need to hear a lot more of them. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Carla, thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
We've been talking with Bill Redpath, a Libertarian candidate running for U.S. House in Virginia's 10th District. His website, launching later this month, is redpath2014.com. The Libertarian Party and its candidates are working to reduce the size, scope, authority, taxation, and spending of big government so that you are safer, more free, and less taxed, so the world is at peace, and so you and every American enjoys the opportunity and prosperity that is possible here in our country. Please visit lp.org, learn more about the Libertarian Party, join us, and help us help you cut your taxes and make government small. That's lp.org. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Carla Howell, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Carla Howell again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.